99, proceeded.
Redbird Sports Talk. Interviews and professional sports news all in one place.
Redbird's playing a lot on the outside. Open three for Poindexter. Got it.
The quarterbacks just couldn't figure out the passing game.
You're listening to Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND. Blasting off in 3, 2, 1.
Dave Birds, welcome to this edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Red Bird Nation. I'm Mikey Frinelli here with Benjamin Hootie and Braden Fogerson. Now, Ben, you said something to me the other day. I think we were either recording this or we do another podcast together. But you were saying that I call you Benjamin when I introduce you, but never other than that. I just did it. I don't know why that is.
It's just it's formal. I bet my mom loves it. She loves when people just like, especially like in this situation where it's like that's the name that my parents gave me. So.
Well, it's funny because I am obviously Michael is my birth name, but I've never gone by Michael. And in class and stuff, for the most part, it's usually Mike. And around here, most people call me Mikey. That's what I introduce myself as around here. And just like that's how I was as a kid and everything like that. But it's the opposite. Like I've never wanted to have a super formal name. Like if I was doing a newscast and they were like, and now at the 11:30, Michael Fornelli, I would probably up and leave the studio. Like I'm glad.
But you do it every time to me.
Yeah, I'm glad that you don't get as offended as I would.
No,
I'm
don't
saying.
Care that much.
Braden, did you ever have a nickname growing up, or were you always Braden?
I'll say I was never Burger until I came
this
here.
This is true. Burger is new.
So when I was in baseball, I was horrendous. And so they called me my nickname was Fertilizer. And you can connect the dots of why I was Fertilizer, but that was my nickname in high school. So.
All right. What a great way to start the show. Woo. I love that. Looking over my fantasy baseball team right now. I'm in the final four, the semifinals. We'll get into some baseball later in the show. I think we'll do that in segment number two before we spend the back half talking about football, as always, during football season. But first, let's run it around with a Redbird Roundup recap. As much as you want to talk about with the Redbirds, let's start with, I think, some football this weekend. Home football against Lindenwood. The ISU Redbirds coming in at 2-1 against a newly minted D1 opponent in Lindenwood. And Ben, you said you wanted to air some grievances, get up on the soapbox after what was, I would say, a disappointing performance in Charleston last weekend against Eastern Illinois.
Yeah, that's a team you got to take care of if you truly are a top 25 team in the nation. It's disappointing that they came out with a performance like that, and really I think it just kind of, we talked about it last week about how it's great to have this awesome defense to kind of carry you, but those were the two opponents they played at the beginning of the season were not the best.
Mm-hmm.
Eastern a little better than those. You want your offense to play better overall, and you want better play out of the quarterback is more what I'm trying to say. Is he's got to make the big play at the end there. He throws an interception that kind of seals it for Eastern. So I don't know. You just want better play out of your offense if you truly want to do something in the FCS this year.
Is the leash now short? And I guess I'll direct this towards Braden, who called the first football game. Is the leash now short for Anixtad? Do you think we'll see a little bit more of Rittenhouse, who did get into that first blowout game?
No, because Rittenhouse did not look great in the blowout game. He was up against that same defense that was being exposed all game, and they didn't score or even really threaten to score in that time. So at least from what I've seen from that, obviously you have practice and stuff, and you know they didn't have their foot on the pedal anymore either. So you know maybe you know Coach Spack sees something that we didn't see in that game. But from what I saw, I didn't really see anything crazy there.
So we head into this game against Lindenwood, and like I talked about, I kind of hinted at it, Lindenwood only in year two of Division I athletics. So on the surface, a matchup you think you should win, I would say. 2-1 also on the season. They lost to Southeast Missouri State, and they beat Wisconsin-Stevens Point. They also beat Western Illinois. So they were kind of beating up on teams that were in that low D1, even D2 area before. And now they have a nice win against a one conference opponent for ISU or adjacent conference adjacent opponent and a very similar school to ISU in Western Illinois.
Yeah, and I mean Illinois State was able to take care of Western 2 weeks ago now, so I think the expectation going into this game is get the win, and I think you really want to show out. You know, you're back at home again after 2 weeks away, so I think this is an important game for the season because after this is kind of feels like another tune-up game potentially before you get into some real good opponents like South Dakota State and Indiana State.
it starts a stretch of home games that goes three games, and then four out of five are at home. Lindenwood, South Dakota State, Indiana State, all at home. They travel over to Youngstown State, the Penguins, on October 21st, and then Northern Iowa a couple days before Halloween, October 28th. So I think it was Steve Cease who mentioned a couple weeks ago this ISU team had the makings to go 4-0. Unfortunately, we're upset in Charleston last weekend, 14-13. But to get on the right track and head into the conference home slate with that 3-1 record would be really strong for a team that desperately just needs a win in a bounce back situation, because the Jackrabbits on October 7th are going to not just lay down and lose.
Yeah, I'm excited to call that game, especially because South Dakota State's a really good team this mm-hmm. year, and I think they're number one, right?
Yeah, they're a solid squad, and that's also a night game. It's rare. They have usually one or two home night games a year. I think we were lucky enough to have two last year. I specifically remember it was
later in the season.
Southern Illinois, there was one, and I feel like I was confusing the 2 years. I'm also thinking of Butler the year before. That was also an opening night game. But Braden, before I move on to volleyball, any comments further from you on the state of this football team and what to expect this tomorrow?
Honestly, I'm just glad that we get a lot of Redbird sports in one weekend, because if football doesn't go well, then maybe you can shift your attention to volleyball and maybe that goes a little bit better.
And we'll shift the segment over to the volleyball team. Guys, they won. They finally, not only did they win one, they won two. They're 2-10 now on the year, which does not sound impressive on paper, but considering it was at one point on 0-9, leaving the Redbird Classic, going into the Capital Credit Union Classic in Green Bay, Wisconsin. They got wins against St. Thomas and the host Green Bay. They lost in four sets to South Dakota.
Unfortunately, it's Drake and UNI to start their conference schedule, and those teams were both phenomenal last year. Three losses between the two teams in conference play a year ago, and two of their three losses were just in the matches they played against each other, in which they split that season series. So two teams that are expected to be really good in the MVC again. I think they're still very good teams as well. It's going to be a pretty brutal start for the Redbirds. But if they can make something out of it, it makes it that much more impressive.
I will say, though, even though obviously once you turn into MVC conference play, things can change and your season can go different ways. But starting the season right now, Drake 7-5 and UNI is 6-6. So probably not the starts that they were looking for. But once again, that's kind of all tune-up games for these teams. And it really only matters once you get into Valley play and see what you can do with that. And as you said, two great teams from a year ago.
That's what we kind of talked about last week, and I think I'm going to reiterate that. Everything could change for the Redbirds. It doesn't matter how poorly they started. Everything could change this weekend for the Redbirds when it comes to, if they go in and get one win or two wins, they can totally start their conference season and forget about the non-con season, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. And for a team that won the conference 4 years in a row just to miss the conference tournament last season outside of that top 10, I think that's kind of the goal, just to be in the running for getting a shot at another conference title.
Yeah, I mean, if that's your outlook too, like, I feel like I agree there, because I mean, you're still kind of a little bit of in a transition period. And so, yeah, I like that outlook.
Well, I mean, this team is new, but the common misconception is that they're young. They have 10 new transfers, but half of those are graduate students. Like, they're new. They're clicking still. Maybe they finally clicked over the weekend and won two out of three, but they're not young. They're not inexperienced players. I mean, this is Allie Matters' hand-picked transfer team. I mean, the recruiting classes that are coming in were still put together by Leah Johnson, because it's done years in advance, but the transfer classes coming in, these are the players that she attracted to the program, saying, hey, we had a losing season last year, but we have what it takes through a transition period to compete for the conference. So I don't think she's at all happy about the 2-10 start, or was about the 0-9. She told us so in that presser last weekend.
Yeah, but you know, you feel like at the very least, it's not like what the basketball team was over the past few years, where it just feels like the locker room is just kind of like a sad place to mm-hmm. be. Like, they are at least fun to be together, and you feel like they have a lot of chemistry. They like playing with each other. And so when you have that scenario, you know, it makes it a little bit easier to transition and turn things around a little bit than when you're in a situation where the locker room's really toxic.
I'm going to call an audible. We didn't talk about this, but I want to talk about this before we go to the next segment. ISU basketball open practice on Monday morning. The season's going to start for the men's basketball team before we know it. Early thoughts? The first game, Ben, you're going to be covering some stuff for us, and you had that presser for us that the first exhibition we'll see against Wesleyan is just before Halloween. So it's on the horizon earlier than usual. Open practice on Monday. What do you think for this year? And kind of a very similar situation. Year two for Ryan Peden and a hand-picked team of transfers.
Right. It's exciting, I think, because last year was tough because you were kind of bringing a squad in that was already inherited.
Mm-hmm.
So I think expectations are high because you always want the basketball team to be good here. But I think we're going to have to see them play a little bit as a unit together before we could really make impressions about what this team could potentially be, especially in the Missouri Valley Conference.
I feel the same way. I feel like, yes, you saw what the team could be with a new leader at least, but still kind of the same players. Now what does the team look like with players that, the coach has seen? Last year they had a lot of stars up top, but they had no depth, and so therefore they were just exhausting everyone up at the top. Now that you have your own guys, you've got a lot of very promising freshmen, a lot of young guys, a transfer from Illinois even. I'm not saying that it's going to immediately click and all of a sudden Redbird basketball is going to be good all of a sudden, but I think it's hard to imagine a scenario where they don't improve a lot this year.
And I think you just want to continue to see continued improvement as long as Coach Peden's under center.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you want the team to be a perennial powerhouse at the top of the Missouri Valley Conference where you have the chance to compete to make March Madness every single year. But it's still a new group, and it's not entirely a group of young guys either. I know Pence, the kid that they got, mm-hmm. is probably a kid that they want to build around for the future, and hopefully we will end up seeing that down the line. But right now it's just about being better than last year, I think, is the main goal overall.
And the marketing opportunities are abundant because Ty Pence looks just like Zac Efron. So there's something there for some kind of Troy Bolton spirit wear.
Redbird basketball, the musical.
If the NIL opportunities knock, if they're playing well and Ty Pence is playing well, then there's something there. And maybe we'll revisit that someday, or future host of Red Zone will revisit that statement, and they'll all be wearing their bet on it. Get your head in the game. Ty Pence merch. This weekend, before we end the segment, this weekend on Z&D, we have September 22nd, which is Friday. That's tomorrow. Drake versus ISU volleyball, 6 p.m. And then we have Redbird football hosting Lindenwood at noon on Saturday before. Stay tuned on that same day, and ISU will face UNI at 7 p.m. in volleyball. 3 games, 2 days. Stay tuned to the pulse of Redbird Nation all weekend. When we come back, we're going to get into the National League wildcard race in the MLB. You're listening to The Red Zone. One of the three WDND. It's The Red Zone. It's a Thursday night. I know it's the only thing you look forward to on a Thursday night. There's nothing more important. I mean, football, no. You want to talk about us. You want to talk to the guys about sports, Redbird sports, baseball, a whole half an hour of football coming up on The Zone. Ben Howell of the Z&D News team coming on later. But first, let's talk about the National League wildcard race. This is getting pretty crazy out in the NL. So it's weird. I was talking today to somebody. The AL is like an opposite. Like the wild card is still so shifty. You don't know who's going to win their divisions, who's going to win their wild card. It's a number of which teams you know will make it, but you don't know how, what route. But right now in the NL, it's pretty obvious it's going to be the Braves, Dodgers, and without a complete meltdown, Milwaukee. So that leaves five and three-fourths teams that are debating for three other spots. Philly, Arizona, the Cubs, the Marlins, and then the, like, half a team each is the, I'm looking at, okay, the Reds are a full team, then the Giants, and then the Padres.
That's insane.
And then, right directly under the Padres, they don't have a chance, but the fact that they were doing so poorly for so long, the Mets are still only 10 games below 500, so they're kind of flirting with it. They're not going to make it, but I think it's interesting that they're still pesky enough to be around, and they have to play a lot of these teams I just mentioned. So the Padres are the bottom of that. They kind of have to go 8-0 or so from yesterday on. But it really kind of comes down to, it seems like Phillies mostly have it secured, but they are only 2 games above the Diamondbacks. The middle of the pack there is where it gets interesting. Ben and I operate a separate Cubs podcast, so I want to hear Braden's thoughts first. As an unbiased perspective,
what do you think? I'm a little biased because I'm against the Cubs.
You are against the Cubs, but what do you think of this hodgepodge in the middle, you know, forgetting Philly and forgetting San Francisco and San Diego, who has what it takes to take those last two spots out of the D-backs, the Cubs, the Marlins, and the Reds?
I think one of the best ways to judge is run differential, and the Cubs have a plus 93, and everyone else in that hodgepodge are negative run differential, mm-hmm. and I feel like the team that should make the wild card should be deserving, and it's hard to argue that a team like Cincinnati that's negative 47, even with all the rookie players that were really exciting or anything like that, it's hard to argue for them. Arizona, I think what we have right now with Philadelphia, Arizona, and Chicago is probably the most deserving three. I really like Miami because, you know, they've been bad my whole life, and now just the past couple of years since like 2020, they've actually been kind of good, and, you know, I'm happy for them for that. But I still don't feel like Miami has as complete a team as they need right now, and I think that the three that you have in the wild card right now is probably the three most deserving.
Kudos to the Reds. The Reds kind of snuck their way back in. They were below 500 for the month of August, and then have kind of put some things together. 6-4 in their last 10. One of the only teams in the hodgepodge that has that positive win-loss record for their last 10 games. The Cubs, of course, 3-7. Miami 5-5. San Francisco 4-6. The Diamondbacks 6-4. So, the Cubs kind of, we kind of have to talk about it. The Cubs kind of blew it.
They blew it.
Yeah.
I mean, we could have had this thing not necessarily wrapped up, but if you just kept winning series, we could be talking.
Mm-hmm.
They could have kind of had this thing wrapped up, similar to how Philly has it. So, yeah, it's, as you said, it's a hodgepodge. It's a mess. And I think it will be a mess until that last Sunday and mm-hmm. a week and a half from now. So there a lot of things got to go the Cubs' way because they are just not playing good baseball right now. I think there's no other way to put it.
Yeah.
Six out of your last seven games, you've only won one. It's disappointing, especially considering how well they played in August and September. They just kind of hit the brakes on everything. Pitching's just not doing well at all compared to what it was in August and July, and the offense is even going through a little bit of a slump here. So it's fun for, I think, national baseball fans that they get to watch this absolute mess of a wild card, and we get to have an exciting race to the finish. And I love also how there's a lot of, really, Arizona, Chicago, Miami, Cincinnati, it's a group of four really young teams that mm-hmm. I think can really be good in the next couple of years, but right now it's all about who can get to the playoffs first, and I think that's going to be super exciting to watch.
Due to the off day Monday, the Cubs won less games than the Marlins on the season, so by win percentage in this fictional, if the playoffs started today, which I hate, in general I hate when that's said, but the Cubs are in that third wild card spot, that sixth and final seed in the NL. But in total, the Marlins do have the tiebreaker over the Cubs. I believe the Cubs only have a tiebreaker over the Giants. So, and the way it shakes out this year, which I'm not a huge fan of, is that they've struck in down the tiebreaker game, the classic game 163 that caused so many great moments and great memories and fun battles among, you know,
and disappointment.
The pre-wild card. Yeah, and disappointment for us in 2018 and other times. But the pre-wild card game was always a fun time, and now they have done away with it, and they have instead resulted to head-to-head tiebreakers. And if that's the case, the Cubs gotta strictly, literally win more games than their opponents, because there is no other route.
Yeah. And that's kind of the part that's so disappointing about it as a Cubs fan, trying to be as unbiased here as possible. But
we're here in Illinois. We're obvious. Both of us are Cubs fans, and it is disappointing. Like, I'm not afraid to say it's disappointing. This is a team that I think no one had super high expectations on. I mean, we're six games above 500 in the end of the year here, the last 2 weeks. That alone, if you would have told me that in June or July, that I would have been thrilled with that. Like, that's, I mean, June probably when it was looking pretty meek.
It's just the thing that's frustrating about it too is like a team like Miami, like the Cubs wrapped up their entire series with Miami like back in May. They haven't played a game against Miami since then. The Cubs are a different team than them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's kind of like maybe I do want the game 163 still to give at least that one last chance.
Yes.
If there were to be tiebreakers involved, because the Cubs are a different team, and even Miami's a little bit of a different team. It's different than this past Arizona series where, you know, they played all their games in the last 2 weeks, and the Cubs only won one. So I don't know.
You know, if it does get to that, and the Cubs miss out on that tiebreaker, I think the one consolation would be that when there was a game 163, they still wouldn't have made it because there would have only been two wild card spots to go for instead of
three. That's true.
So yeah. The trade-off for losing that game 163 possibility is that it's because there's a third wild card spot entirely up for grabs. True. So.
The Braves and the Dodgers have clinched their divisions. The Brewers, just a couple games away from doing it themselves, 87 wins in the season. This next best is the Cubs at 79. The Brewers keep rolling. Anything else from either of you guys on the NL before I move on to the American League?
I got nothing, yeah.
As we look forward into the AL wildcard picture, it's totally different. Because
that's too many teams right. that deserve it. Yeah. There's too many strong teams there. Tampa Bay's already locked into the playoffs.
Every day it flips between Baltimore and Tampa Bay, and that's a huge deal because Minnesota's in line to essentially still play as a wildcard seed because, as we've talked about, three through six have to play at the wild card level. So only the top two division winners get to move on,
Hear me out. I would rather play Minnesota as a four seed, having lost the division, than if I were a one seed and I had to play Seattle, Toronto, Texas. I would say.
But even then, I don't know who it's. We don't know until the last day who it's going to be because even Houston only has a game on Seattle and Texas.
Yeah.
And even Baltimore has a game on the Rays, and that's all it's going to be in the AL East for now. Like, Toronto and New York are both 76 and 85. New York has just stayed pesky enough to keep things interesting. They're now back to 500, but I don't think there's enough left there. They're still 8 games below the back wild card spot.
Yeah.
So I think that's a little too late. It's very similar to the Padres in the NL. What's funny, though, is that's 76 and 76 is that's how much higher up it'll get you in the AL picture.
Mm.
So it's, I don't know. That's going to be tough because this current look at the AL wildcard race could be totally different tomorrow based on who wins and who doesn't. It's so much more compact.
It's fun. It's fun to watch. It's fun to follow, yeah.
You got to give a lot of credit to Toronto, too. My first show was, 2 or 3 weeks ago now?
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of ripped them off. We were like, it feels like it's every year with them where they just kind of fall off. And they've just been going on streak after streak after streak. They've won 5 games in a row. And obviously Texas fell off a little bit, too. So I don't know. This reminds me a lot of like that great wild card race a couple of years ago. Actually, many years ago. Remember when Evan Longoria walked it off on the last day of the season? It was like a game 163 kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, no, I
now,
do, yeah.
We could talk about game 163 for
that 2011.
Yes, 2011.
No, that was the greatest day of baseball ever. Between the Rays thing and the Yankees game, the Cardinals getting in on the last day. There's like a video on YouTube recapping everything happening like down to the timeline.
That's what's lining up for at least the AL and could very well happen for a couple of the NL wildcard seeds, but for division wins, that could very well happen in the AL. But that's also my biggest issue with this new playoff structure. And it doesn't mean anything to win your division if you aren't in the top two records. Like the winner of the AL Central at this point, it doesn't mean anything. Like, it changes your matchup. It gives you home field. That's it. Like it doesn't, like it's, you're just the third wildcard seed.
I guess
the top wild card
seed. You just got to play better then. I don't know.
I get it. I
would understand it if all the AL, like all the AL wild, or all the AL division winners were like 90 plus win teams and like Minnesota was right there with the other two, but they're not. They're just playing worse baseball against way worse opponents than Tampa Bay and, or it doesn't even
That's
matter.
True.
Any
it's,
of the division winners in the East or West have to play.
Almost as always, it's kind of, despite there being three contenders from out west, it's kind of crazy how many AL East teams are still in the running and will make the playoffs. Baltimore and Tampa have already punched their ticket. Toronto's well on their way, and crazy things that happened, then New York sliding in. I mean, there's a lot of competitors. And then Boston's right there too.
Yankees are done.
I bet they're done, but crazier things have happened. We just discussed during the commercial break about how the Padres can do it, and they're in the exact same spot.
Houston's only up one game though in their division.
Yeah, exactly. So
half
they're
a game.
They're separated. Houston's separated by half a game with both Seattle and Texas. Baltimore's only up a game on Tampa Bay. There's both of those, except for the AL Central. Both of those divisions, which is pretty much locked up for the Twins, by the way, both of those two divisions, the East and West, are anyone's game. Unless one team goes in a complete streak in the East, then that could change it. But out West, there's three teams that it'll come down to right at the end.
Imagine the World Series champion Astros don't make it.
That could very well be the case. And it wouldn't be a hangover season. It would just be that two other teams are riding that 90 win.
You're welcome, MLB because I would have jinxed Houston by having visited their ballpark, and that would be the reason they missed the playoffs.
I'm looking at this right now. Astros are 39-39 at home this year.
Mm.
That's probably the difference in the division
but
at the end of the day.
They're so good on the road that it's impressive.
46-29 and vacations across
maybe
the MLB.
Maybe they would rather just get a wild card spot.
Yeah, exactly.
They've been very battered for a team, though. Like, the reason that they are this off is because they've had a lot of injuries to their stars, I would say.
I've seen a lot of complaints on Twitter, X, whatever it might be, about Dusty Baker this year from Astros fans.
I kind of thought that was it for him, honestly, last year.
They are very upset with him this year because they have this rookie catcher. His name's Yennier Diaz. Very good player. And he should be up in, like, the AL Rookie of the Year contention, whatever it might be, but he doesn't like have enough at bats or anything because they still choose to play Martin Maldonado like every single day.
Cubs legend Martin Maldonado?
2 weeks.
He did kind of win them that last World Series game by like stepping over the plate or whatever it is that he did. But
we're gonna think about this because Dusty Baker at the end of last season, I kind of thought, okay, he finally got his ring. This might be his like Bruce Arians, you know, I'm going to step back kind of moment. Like, I did it for long enough. Like, let's kind of call it a day. I'm kind of surprised he's back out there. But, I mean, it's not like the team is bad. It's not like he can't go win another one. But, I understand the frustration there. He's getting up there in age. And Yonier Diaz is hitting .287 with 23 home runs, and he just doesn't have enough at-bats to be in that contention. And thank you, Ben, for just sliding me that stat because that is – I mean, that's insane.
And he doesn't play every day. Like,
that's nuts.
Put that in perspective.
How many at bats is that sample pool for .283? And I'll keep talking while you look for that. But that is pretty crazy. But is that all on Dusty, or is that they want to give Maldonado the respect, or do you think the pitching staff would rather pitch to a veteran catcher?
Well, why? I mean, catcher's such a hard position to play, like consistently, like most days in the lineup, most days being a starter. And as a rookie, like, it is a long season to be starting from beginning, and it's maybe they just don't want to push the guy. I mean, he's just starting out. He's got a whole career ahead of him.
That's a good point, too.
They have the same amount of at-bats this year, but Maldonado is batting a .191 on the season. So that's
hitting on the interstate. He's legitimately hitting on the interstate, like I-91. Like that. I always say that when someone's hitting in the 100s, but that's a real one, too. I don't know if it's a real one in Houston, but he's literally hitting on the interstate. Was it what you were in Houston? Is that a thing?
I would assume it's a little bit further west, but I can't remember the name of the interstate. They're like 90s and stuff. Yeah.
You mean the expressway?
Yeah. But like,
always heard people debate like.
Well, it's the term.
Expressway.
When I was younger, this is our tangent. Before we go to football, when I was younger, I always thought it could only be called a highway if it was one of the literal above ground ones. Like, you know, when you pass under when highways intersect or when state roads intersect with highways, you pass under the cement bridges. I thought that was a highway. Yeah. So when I was told that a highway could just be like on the ground next to all the corn and stuff, that was a cultural shift. Like that, I was probably quiet that entire car ride. I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe my eyes. My mom told me, and I was like, no, mom, why is it called a highway then? Like, it's low. It's on the ground. Mom, you don't know what you're talking about. Speaking of don't know what we're talking about, football, when we come back on the Red Zone. Just past the bottom of the hour, 6:32, which means it's football time. Woo! I want to get a sounder that's like says like it's time for football on the Red Zone. Like, we should maybe do that because that's usually the entire back half an hour of our show. We'll do pick six at 6:45, so get your bet slips ready. But before then, we will talk about our little roundup of the. And no, you shouldn't take our advice as bets. I probably shouldn't say that. But we will do our little roundup of what happened last week in football. Week 2 of the NFL started last Thursday with the Eagles and the Vikings. Now, it was a week ago, Ben Hootie pointed out in the break, so it might be hard for us to recap, but I'll just go over what I said. We said our score predictions were, I went Eagles 24, Vikings 13, Braden went Eagles 28, Vikings 14, and Ben went Eagles 38, Vikings 30. The real score ended up being Eagles 34, Vikings 28. So you are not far off, Ben. So I'll let you lead off here with why you thought that was going to be the case and why it was the case.
I thought it was going to be a shootout, and it kind of was, but it wasn't really. It was more the Vikings playing from behind. The Eagles' offense just works. They gave DeAndre Swift 28 carries for 175 yards. They know how to run. That's all they're going to do all season, and it works. It's going to let them keep winning ball games. Vikings tried to make it close, but they couldn't come through. 0-2 start for the Vikings, which is pretty shocking to see.
To the American Football Conference, where Burrow and the Bengals have yet to figure it out. 27-24 by favor of the Baltimore Ravens. Something's going on over there. And now he didn't even practice today. Yeah.
Yeah, he's hurt. That's it. I mean, they looked outmatched, and it's because Burrow is struggling a little bit.
It wasn't raining, though, so what's your excuse this week?
I'm just going to keep making excuses for the Bengals, you know? That's going to be my weekly segment to make excuses.
I know. I didn't know he was your guy. I thought he was my guy. I'm kidding. I had him in one of my fantasy leagues, but why is it your guy?
Because I've drafted him every year in fantasy.
Well,
I have a strong connection to all my fantasy football players, as you'll learn throughout.
Was it
That's why
you?
I have the sweatshirt on right now.
You have a Raiders hoodie on, and I bet Brayden likes that. Yeah, you have a Raiders hoodie.
I love Devontae Adams.
I know.
So.
Are you one of the guys who will like send your fantasy players like a thank you note basically if they do good?
I have before, yes.
And like I know people get in a lot of trouble for doing like the negative ones.
Oh,
like,
I never do negative.
No, the negative ones are not cool. But like the thank you notes, I feel like are okay.
Yeah, I always send. I text Amon-Ra St. Brown after every single game because he's my guy.
What do you say?
Thank you, Sun God. That's his nickname.
That's all you say. Speaking of Amon-Ra St. Brown, let's look at the Seahawks and the Lions. What a shootout that one was. Yeah. That one was good. 37-31, quite possibly the game of the week. Lions are legit, but they also seem very similar to what I prophesized. What did I say? They might score 31. They'll still lose 32-31. But no, they lost 37-31. The Seahawks, a lot of cooks in that kitchen, and it's working out for Pete Carroll and that offense.
Well, it kind of finally worked for them, and the Lions, like you said, I mean, their offense is just really, really spectacular. And the Seahawks, on the other side, just kind of were able to stick with them the whole time. I don't know if there's a whole lot to draw from, because I watched a lot of this game, and I still don't know what to draw out of what I think of the Seahawks, but I am very much more solidified with the Lions right now.
I will just say really quickly, I just think it's two really good football teams.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it at the beginning of the year in our preseason discussion how we like the Seahawks this year. And I think, obviously, it's really similar to what the Lions were last year. A lot of shootouts.
Yeah. They're going to continue to do it. And hey, maybe it'll just go their way more often. I mean, you know how different their record probably could have been if, like, a coin flip went a different way last season? It's like the Bills 2 years ago. Colts and Texans, battle of two of the top-picked quarterbacks in last year's draft between Anthony Richardson and C.J. Stroud. Richardson looked really good and went into being a 31-20 win, although he did leave the game via way of injury. So kind of a bittersweet win for the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah, just, you know, who's going to get the first pick? I feel like Bull, even though there's probably another team that we'll eventually talk about that should be in that discussion. But, yeah, I don't think there's really anything big to take away from this game besides some solid play from Stroud and Richardson.
All right, you said later in the discussion, but actually it's right now.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Bears are bad. Move on.
Yeah, I don't even want to talk about it because this feels so far away. It doesn't feel like only 5 days ago because so much has happened this week in Bears camp. There's no defensive coordinator anymore. There is Justin Fields blaming coaching and then completely doing a 180 on that quote. The Bears fell to the Buccaneers 27-17 in an absolutely abysmal performance offensively last weekend. There was one or two maybe brilliant drives, but then after that it was just maybe the worst pick six I've ever seen. And, I mean, truly maybe the worst pick six ever seen. It was just a little dump pass over the middle and
right into the defensive
line, who just barreled 5 yards forward into the touchdown. It's is Baker Mayfield the nightmare of NFC North defenses? Do you think he read the Bears defense too, like the Vikings?
I just think he might be in a really good position this year. That's a good coaching staff over there. Mm-hmm. Do you think they were mentored by Tom Brady? I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing, but I think he could be in a very good position this year. Buccaneers at 2-0 is pretty crazy.
If you're going to have an off year to figure out how to be an OC or how to run a team, if you're Byron Leftwich and that Buccaneers team, do it with the GOAT in his retirement year, and then it doesn't matter who's under center. They could have Brock Purdy. They could have Baker Mayfield. They're going to be feisty all this entire year. It's also a matter of the fact that the Bears are terrible. And they have to go face the Chiefs and Jaguars, the Chiefs, sorry, they have to face the Chiefs this weekend, but the Chiefs and Jaguars game was the over betters nightmare over the weekend. I think everyone thought that one was going to be the Seahawks and Lions. And Braden, you're our resident AFC expert, so I'll defer to you. But that 17-9 in that one, and just underwhelming, but Chiefs got their first win of the season.
It was kind of weird to see both of the offense kind of stumble out of the gate a little bit and the defenses do well. The Jaguars defense is like not even just like what I thought, which was the Jaguars defense is going to be good because they face a bunch of easy teams. They're like actually kind of good. And I think people are starting to realize that, but the Chiefs still able to ultimately win because they're the Chiefs. So,
well, good thing the Chiefs are going to put on an absolute track meet against their opponent this weekend, and one that doesn't have a defensive coordinator. So that's the game that if you want to take some kind of silly alternate line. I mean, I keep seeing memes where it's like Chiefs minus 38.5, like a college football score for Chiefs and Bears this weekend. But we'll leave it at that, and we'll move on to maybe the surprise team of the NFL so far in the NFC, the Falcons defeating the Packers 25-24 in a shootout over there. Are the Packers not legit, or are the Falcons legit?
I think this is just a game of two scrappy teams that are going to be pretty solid this year across the way. We talked about it last week with Atlanta, how we think that they could be pretty scrappy, and I think this proved it right now. Definitely going to want to get better play out of Ridder, but, man, that backfield with Algiers and Bijan Robinson, it's just going to work all year long for them.
I was getting mad at how early people were drafting Bijan Robinson in fantasy drafts this year. I know it was such a weird year for running backs, and when most drafts went down, it was a lot of people still holding out. So, you know, him going second or third was overall was kind of a given, but I was like, hey, it's a rookie running back. They have an excited backfield already, but he's looked like the real deal far. Yeah, he looks like great so far. Let's move on to the Raiders and the Bills. The Bills kind of found their fire. 38-10. Now, Ben might have the Raiders hoodie on today, but we'll defer to Braden Fogerson to tell us what went wrong in Raider Town after you were so high on him last weekend. I was so sad for you because I wanted you to still be high on the Raiders in a 38-10 loss. Though, what exactly went wrong for Jimmy G and the fellas?
They weren't facing the Broncos the second straight week. Their playbook is limited, and it worked early on, but then eventually the Bills started countering it, and Jimmy G just continued to get picked, and the confidence wasn't there. Josh Jacobs looked really bad. I mean, some of it was the blocking, but honestly, Jacobs was really struggling. Just kind of like the Raiders have kind of always operated on the idea, our defense is going to be bad, but can we at least do well in offense? And this was a game where they didn't do that either.
All right, I'll give you guys both a breather break here. I'll go over this one really quick. I don't think, even though it's kind of weird because the Chargers now fall to 0-2, Titans upset the Chargers 27-24. Derrick Henry still looks legit, even though he does have a questionable injury himself at this point. Who doesn't? What running back doesn't right now? It's really a shame. And Justin Herbert and the Chargers fall to 0-2 on the season. They thought it would be, they found the reason why they had kind of underwhelmed. They needed a new OC, nagged from the Cowboys, and then what's the deal? 0-2. I said I'd give you guys a breather break, but I need one of you guys to tell me, like, what's the deal out in Chargers town? Why are they not buying in for the X straight year?
I told you ahead of time that everyone always buys high on the Chargers at the beginning of the year. And I was there telling you I don't really see anything different than the past few years. And so far, that's what I'm seeing. They still have a pretty good offense and everything, but they're not quite there.
I can tell you the problem right now. It's Brandon Staley. He needs to go. Like, they should have fired him after his last season. Yeah. Look at what happened in the playoffs. Yeah. I don't want to spend too much time on this because we got games covered, but he is just he's not a good football coach. I'm sorry.
49ers best the Rams for, I think it was the 9th straight time in the regular season, I think they said in the broadcast, which is crazy because in that time the Rams have won a ring, and the Niners have been up there themselves a number of times, even losing in the championship at one point. But the Niners and Rams, that's a good game, but I think the Niners are about as legit as we think, and we'll get into that in pick six, but that's who we're going to see tonight, absolutely run up the score on the Giants, and they got a nice feisty win against a Rams team that's been pretty surprising.
A lot of waiver wire claims were made in the middle of that game because of the Rams offense.
Puka Nacua.
Nacua and Williams.
Tutu Atwell.
Yeah.
Tyron Williams.
So
I have a lot there.
I picked up both Nacua and Brock Purdy ahead of this week, and I was a happy fantasy owner because I had Fields, and after the week one performance in a two quarterback league, I was like, I need a backup quarterback. So I picked up Brock Purdy, the best available quarterback in the waiver wire. I'm down to only $68 out of 100 in my budget, as I told you, Ben, but hey, I got Puka and I got Jerome Ford, even though now Kareem Hunt's back, so it doesn't really matter. But we'll get into that with the Monday night game. But let's keep moving on because we only have a couple more minutes. Giants, Cardinals. Cardinals blew a, I believe, 28-0, 28-7. What was
21
it?
To oh, my God. 21-3.
21-3. Okay, so it wasn't exactly 31 unanswered, but I think it was – so that means it was what? 61 straight points without scoring one for the New York Giants. Things were starting – it was about to be panic town for Danny Dimes and the Giants.
It's a disgusting game.
Disgusting. Two teams. Two teams. And the Giants are going to be sent right back down to Bearsville tonight against the 49ers. But that's a different story where fans can mope and complain. We feel you, Giants fans. Cowboys, Jets. Cowboys win that one 30-10.
Nothing much.
Trevon Diggs is out for the season, but I think the Cowboys have a sure shot at a championship. I'll say that. The Commanders, Broncos. Broncos country.
Let's cry.
It's not. I don't think Sean Payton and Russell Wilson was the diamond in the rough combo they once advertised as. I think things aren't good out there. Anyone have any comments on what went down in that game? I barely even watched.
There was a hold on the last play.
Yes.
And
I did see that.
Unfortunately, like, there's no reason the refs would sell for that, because like, the NFL wants an exciting ending. Like, you don't want it to end like that.
Right.
But they did miss a hold there, so that sucks.
Patriots starting 0-2 for the first time since 2001. And that was of course, the year that a certain quarterback who's pretty decent actually came in to start playing for the team. Yeah. I don't know if you heard of him. But anyway, the Dolphins got a win 24-17. And the scrappy Patriots have put up two very good fights and only have two losses to show for it. I think the Patriots should hang around as a team that won't go any better than maybe 6-7 wins at the most. But they're going to be scrappy no matter who plays them. And the Dolphins are maybe the best, if not one of the best teams in the AFC, and they still struggled against this Patriots scrappiness.
Okay, but Mac Jones is not that inspiring, I wouldn't say.
No, but they're just going to still find a way to make you work for a win.
But I'm just saying that's my takeaway from it, is that Mac Jones is still not there yet.
No, he's not there. I don't know if he ever will be. I think there's been a lot of time to see if he would fit into the Belichick system, as maybe Tom Brady did, and there was no. I don't see it yet.
Yeah.
Ben's giving me the wrist thing. We gotta get to pick six. let's finish all these last two games here.
Derek Carr's bad.
Saints and Panthers. Yeah, Derek Carr's bad.
It's over.
Ugly games.
Steelers and Browns 26-22. Again, an ugly game. Jerome Ford, breakout player of the week. Too many people overbought on fantasy, myself included. And now they signed Kareem Hunt. Week three gonna be in the next segment. We do our pick six picks here on the Red Zone. But joined now by Mr. Benjamin Howell. Can we say Benjamin for you? Can we say Ben for you?
Yeah, we make a difference. Otherwise, okay. You say Ben, we're both going to start talking.
Yeah, that's true. I get it. Okay, well, I call him Hudsy, which is weird because you told us to call you Hudsy, but your last name is pronounced Hootie.
Well, I was given that name by former co-host or Red Zone co-host Dane.
Dane Dreyfuss. So. Well,
it's
Dane,
just kind of stuck.
Dane's last name is weird, too, because you would think it's Dreyfuss, but he always goes, no, it's Dreyfuss. So mine is Mike Fornelli. There's no kind of iterations, nothing you can figure out with it. Braden Fogerson. See, we know how it is, Braden. We tell people that's how you pronounce it, and there's no iterations of it.
Yeah,
so
no,
I respect that about you.
Yeah.
All right, Ben Howell, news director of WZND.
Yes.
Fantasy football legend.
Of course.
Yeah. How are you looking for fantasy football? I didn't check your record before you came on.
I'm 1-1.
Okay.
Last time I absolutely crushed the hopes and dreams of Homelander.
Team Homelander.
And then I just lost to the wonderful Miss Audrey Goff. She
has a good team.
Well, we were pretty neck and neck. And then, last half of Monday's game, she just rose above really quickly. And then now I'm scared to face the Detroit Gavinos,
the full NFC North team. He's already dropping Justin Fields, by the way, in favor of Matt Stafford. Wow. I don't know if he's dropping him. I think he's benching him, he told me. Yeah. He had a full NFC North team is what Gavin tried to do, and now he's picking up Matt Stafford. And he said he's only playing NFC North players or NFC North adjacent players, like former NFC North players. So that's where Matt Stafford comes into play. I respect the dedication. Let's get into pick six. We already are running a little late here. We'll start with the Giants and the 49ers. Thursday night football. Steve Seitz went with the Niners. I went with the Niners. I kind of talked about it in our roundup. I said I think it's just going to be cut and dry. Saquon not playing. Most of the Giants offensive line not playing. Danny Dimes and the boys struggled to beat the worst team in the NFL last weekend. I think this should be a sweep, but let's see. Ben Hootie.
I've already put it all in for us. I'm pretty sure we're going Niners across the board, right?
Yeah.
Unless, Ben, do you have something else?
I agree. Yeah.
Niners are just an amazing football team. I told you last week they're my championship pick. I love them. I think they're just phenomenal, and they're gonna run the floor tonight.
I hope Brock Purdy has millions of points, because I actually benched Fields this week in favor of Brock Purdy, because I was just so disappointed in what I've seen from Justin, and they are not in a favorable matchup. We'll get to that one in a second, though. First, let's go Saints and Packers. This one might be a little bit more split, and the first two picks I have are split. Steve, in a stunning turn of events, went with the Packers after picking the Packers to be upset last week and being right. He went with the Packers in this one. I know Derek Carr stinks, but if I'm not going to pick the Bears, which I'm not, I'm going to actively root against the Packers. So my upset pick this week is Derek Carr and the Saints over the Packers. Braden?
I got the Packers. Nothing crazy to think about it, but yeah.
Either of the Bens?
I said it in our last segment. Two frisky teams. Once again, I think we're right there with Packers, Saints being frisky. Give me Derek Carr.
Yes, look at that. I think the Packers, honestly, losing to the Falcons tells you that a frisky team could find a way against the Packers no matter what.
And the other thing is, too, the Saints have a much better defense than the Falcons, so mm-hmm. I think that could have a factor as well.
Ben Howell, to break the tiebreaker.
It is a tiebreaker now?
Yeah, it's a tiebreaker.
That's a lot of pressure.
Myself and Hudsy went with New Orleans, and Steve and Berger went with Green Bay.
I do have a big grudge against Green Bay. I also picked the Saints.
Let's go. Derek Carr and the Saints, and the person who didn't pick the Saints live on the show was the Derek Carr fan himself. Look at that.
I've got to climb my way back up the standings somehow.
We didn't go over the standings. If we have time at the end, we will. Yeah. But Braden is in the cellar, that's for sure. Let's talk about the Bears and the Chiefs. I just made fun of him for not picking his favorite team. Yeah, okay, Chiefs. I'm going to have to say it. It's very rare when I don't pick the Bears and pick six, but I will say what got me over the edge, because I know they're going to lose. I just was still going to pick the Bears for the heck of it. But Dick Butkus, who puts out his picks every single week, has always picked the Bears. Throughout last year when they were trying to lose, he still would pick the Bears. He would just put Da Bears at the bottom of his picks. He wouldn't even put the city. He put the city and the nickname and then just Da Bears. No, he picked the Chiefs. So if it's not good enough for an NFL Hall of Famer, I'm going with the Chiefs.
Yeah, I know this Bears team all too well already. It's going to be hard to travel to Red Kingdom.
Was that a Taylor Swift pun? And
Justin Fields and the Bears coaching staff might have some bad blood. It's going to be hard for the Bears to shake off this 0-3 start.
I mean, I'm thinking that the Chiefs have looked kind of poor in their first two games. I mean, Mahomes is playing for his reputation over the next couple of days, so I think this could be good from Arrowhead.
I got one more.
All right, what?
Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce tend to be mean when they play the Chicago Bears.
Well, hopefully that game's over by midnight, because this is going to be an absolute track meet.
We're killing it right now. Give me the Chiefs.
That's the segment we're going to clip. Anyway, Ben Howell.
Well, you guys raised a lot of good points, but I didn't even think about it that hard. It was kind of a no-brainer, and I picked the Chiefs. Because in this matchup, it's gotten to the point where it's like, how can you pick the Bears?
Yes, exactly. And Steve also went with the Chiefs, so it leaves Braden Fogerson.
Yeah, exactly.
Chiefs?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm so happy I executed that well.
That was good. You snuck it in there well. I hope I was able to kind of ping to the pong there and keep it up, but I think you executed it well.
The Swifties in the Bone Student Center are falling in love with Ben Hootie right now.
Yeah.
And Travis Kelce.
He confirmed it today, too.
Kind of, yeah.
Jason did, and then Travis did. It's just not, they're not like seriously dating, but he said they're hanging out, whatever you want to call it.
His brother kind of confirmed it, though.
Yeah, Jason did, but then Travis Kelce went on the Pat McAfee show, which was so funny because the whole focus of the McAfee show today was just the Bears and Chiefs, even though they're playing this weekend. But the Bears are just talking about the absolute turmoil, and then Travis Kelce comes on, and they're like, so, Travis, you know, out of your game this weekend, are you dating Taylor Swift? They don't prep for the Bears. They're talking about Taylor Swift.
And he was like, all right now. That's his favorite thing to say, all right now.
Yeah, all right. All right, let's move on to the Falcons and the Lions. Steve went with the Lions, no one's surprised. The Falcons are on a beating NFC North team's tear. Give me the Falcons. Bijan Robinson looks really good.
I wish you guys could see Mikey's smile right before.
Because I was so excited to say I'm ready for the Lions to lose. Not the Falcons. Berger, we're running out of time. Give me Lions. We have enough time for you to say why.
Because they're good, and the Falcons are not always. Sometimes they are, but they're not consistent. I think the Lions are more consistent.
All right, Ben Howell.
I have Bijan Robinson on my fantasy team. and the Falcons defense, so I'm just like really manifesting.
Yeah,
that.
By
I need that.
By default.
I
yeah,
need
good.
The Falcons.
Good. And you got some nice points from them last week, and I'm sure, even though you said it was a slugfest against Audrey Goff.
It is, but the Falcons have been doing good by me.
Good.
Said the Lions are going to be in a lot of shootouts this year. I don't think Desmond Ridder and the Falcons will be able to keep up with Jared Goff and the Lions in a shootout. Give me the Lions.
So that one goes by way of 3-2 to the Detroit Lions. Some competitive matchups this week so far in pick six. We have 2 3-2s, but other than that, those are the only points in play because it was a sweep for the Chiefs and a sweep for the 49ers. Steelers, Raiders, the Raiders. Start us off, Braden Fogerson.
Raiders are going to lose.
Really?
Yeah. They've usually kind of played pretty well against the Steelers, but I don't know. This year is just not really – I think it'll be close, but I don't want to say.
I'll go next. Steve had the Steelers. I'm going to take the Raiders. I was truly unimpressed by Kenny Pickett on Monday.
Okay.
I think the Raiders are, like, what do you like to say, frisky? They're frisky enough. They're feisty enough to pull something off.
Which Ben?
I don't know. Ben H.
I'll go. I'll go. Yeah, I'm going to go with the Raiders, too. I didn't love what I saw of the Steelers on Monday night, and I think that offense needs to continue to improve. I like the Raiders' offense a little bit better. I just like Jimmy G throwing that thing down the field to Devontae Adams, and I think that could...
Ben Howell, another tiebreaker.
The Raiders are going to lose. I need you to accept that right now.
Dang. He came on as the guest, and he's just telling the host, hey, man, you're wrong. I respect it. I mean, it's not like we're not equals. He's the news director at ZND, so it's not like, but he came on and just said, man, this guy invited me on their show and he's going to say that. And I think it's also funny because, Fogerson has committed so fully to climbing out of the cellar in the standings that he picked against both the Raiders, his favorite team, and then one of his favorite players' current team in the Saints. You are committed to never taking any upsets. You're just going to chip away at that lead.
I've got to get myself back out of the cellar before I go crazy on anything. I also lost 4 out of my 5 fantasy games last week, so I'm just being very conservative right now.
Week 3 is your week, Braden. Week 3 is your week.
Yeah.
Before we go to the last matchup, Ben, you want to run us through the standings right now for pick six?
So right now we are looking at Steve with a 9-3 record, Mikey and the guests with 6-6, myself at 4-8, not good, and Braden, a little worse, 3-9.
3-9, a reverse of Steve's C's. Braden, did you forecast yourself to be in this position at this point?
No, I can't say that I did, but I've been forecasting pretty awfully so far, so...
I will say Steve, perfect week last week, went 6-0.
He did.
So.
Steve had his pick. Steve's been good right now. I mean, he posts his bets on Twitter and such, and Steve's been on it this season. So, but not anymore. Week 3 is not Steve's week. Week 3 is Braden's week. Like I said, it's Fogerson week.
Yes.
When we come back, I'm going to open the next show next Thursday with Fogerson week. Fogerson week. Fogerson week. That's all I'm going to say. Okay, let's move on. The final matchup on, I believe this is the Monday night one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there's a Monday night doubleheader. I decided to pick the one that seemed a little more.
I like
can tip the stakes.
We don't need to
scale.
Always do both Monday night games. I like picking the best one, just like we did last weekend. Is that a thing that's just going
to
happen? Like, are they going to do two Monday night games?
Just for right now. I think next week we're back to one solo Monday night game.
I don't mind it because ESPN has two brilliant crews. Because it was like they had that like Lewis Riddick leg crew that they already used before Joe Buck and Troy Aikman went over there, and I missed them.
It was
last
the college
year.
Football crew,
right?
Whoever announces the primetime college football games.
So now they have their B team and then their A team of Joe Buck, and they also have the Manning cast crew. So they have three decent broadcasts. Which, say what you want about the Manning cast, I think it's good TV, but. They have three decent broadcasts they can use, and considering they only have one game a week, I think that's a crime. Let's move on to that game, the Rams and the Bengals. As of right now, Joey B is not playing, which leads me to lean towards the Rams. I wish in my confidence pool you can change your pick up until kickoff, so I might change that to the Bengals. But for now, at least for pick six, I'm going to say the Rams because I like what I saw out of the Rams last week against the Niners. I like that despite early training camp reports, Matt Stafford couldn't connect with the young teammates. Puka Nacua has been an absolute standout in the absence of Cooper Kupp, and I think a Joe Burrow-less Bengals team will fall in that rematch of what was once such a great title fight 2 years ago.
I've agreed with Steve on every single game except this one. I am going with the Rams in this one, and the Bengals are good, and I think if each team is healthy, then the Bengals should win that one. But they're not. And so I think that losing the key part of your offense and having a Joe Mixon that's not quite what he once was in his seat, like, I don't know. I feel like the Rams have a little bit more right now.
And as you alluded to, Steve did pick the Cincinnati Bengals. Ben Howell, switching up the order.
I want to make it different between Mikey and the guest being tied 6-6. I want to make that different. I want to get the guest ahead.
Ooh.
And I want to be different.
I didn't even realize we weren't perfect before that. No, wait, were we? Yeah,
almost.
We were. Oh, no, we did. Wait. We had difference in the Raiders and Steelers game. Raiders and Steelers game, we were different.
So maybe next time we'll be looking at 2 points ahead because I'm picking the Bengals.
Ooh, he came ready with all the like quips too. Like Ben Hootie had his like Cubs.
What am I talking about?
Your Cubs hat drew me up. Your Taylor Swift references. He had those ready.
But I could have to take the walk of shame through the offices.
No,
later next week. But
well, I won't.
Now I'm pretty confident now.
Others won't do that to you, but I can't promise myself.
I don't like seeing the Bengals start 0-3. That's tough to watch because they're like my AFC team. I'd already told you the Joe Burrow story, but I don't think he's playing. Give me the Rams on Monday night.
Crazy. All right.
Puka's amazing.
He is awesome, and he's great for my fantasy team, so all you can cry about it. For the rest of us here at WZND, Braden Fogerson, Ben Hootie, Ben Howell, I'm Mikey Finelli. Thank you for listening to this edition of The Red Zone. Enjoy the football game tonight.